evening.
Yes, good evening. Welcome back after a couple of weeks. So today we will be speaking about gratitude and forgiveness. But before we begin speaking about that, let's have a little meditation. Sensations settle down. I allow the body to become still, silent. I allow the mind to become silent. I bring my mind to focus on the present moment, sitting here in this room, on this chair. I turn my attention away from the world outside. And beginning my inner journey, I go deep within. Center of my being, the center of the brain, where I experience my entire existence to be concentrated. Concentrated. Into a point. A point of light. The center of all life and consciousness. The soul, the spirit. Energy concentrated to infinity, indivisible, indestructible, eternal. My original and eternal form. Looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. Silent and peaceful. I experience as though this physical body and this physical world has disappeared. From my awareness,
And I see myself in a world of light. And I see myself in the presence of the Supreme. In the presence of God, the light of all lights, shining down upon me. And I am bathing in this light. Silence, I allow myself to gently return back to this world of matter, back to this body, this costume of mine. And once again I take my place in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the Eternal Spirit, the Being of Light, the Being of Peace, at peace with myself, at peace with the world. Om Shanti.
So good evening once again, and we will today speak about gratitude and forgiveness. Subjects for today. We will try also look at the relationship between these two, gratitude and forgiveness. These two things have actually been around for a very long time, obviously. People have spoken about it a lot. In all the religions of the world, you find these two subjects occupying a very prominent position, gratitude and forgiveness, right? For a long time. And it's nothing new. And so various religious traditions have tried to encourage people to have more gratitude towards themselves, you know, towards the world, towards others, towards God. They've also encouraged people to forgive, tolerate, forgive, forgiving the self, forgiving others for a very long time. But it's only around the year 2000 that we actually started scientifically investigating these concepts. Till then, there wasn't much work, scientific work, on these two concepts. There was a little bit, but not so much. But around the year 2000, people suddenly became very interested in these two concepts. Of course, because of the extent of conflict in the world, that of course has been increasing, many people say, the relevance of things like forgiveness became more and more pronounced. And then people also saw the experiences of some political movements of forgiveness. For example, like in South Africa, at the end of the apartheid regime, there was this Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was set up with Desmond Tutu and many others. And they worked a lot with forgiveness as a political tool, strategy, to bring about peace in the country. And it worked very well. Well, there were also problems, of course, but it worked. It did work to quite a large extent. In Ireland, in Northern Ireland, they experimented with some things around forgiveness. In many other African countries which were ridden by conflict and war, they worked with that. So when people started recognizing that this seems to actually work, it seems to have a very practical, strategic relevance, forgiveness. And also then gratitude. And people started investigating, so how does it really work? How scientific is the utility of things like gratitude and forgiveness, which have a very strong, deep, old religious root? What is the scientific evidence in support of this? So a lot of studies started being done within many areas like that, but specifically gratitude and forgiveness. And we have some extremely interesting results, very, very interesting results coming from studies in both these areas. So, but let me ask you, when we say gratitude, what comes to your mind? When we say gratitude, what comes to your mind? Yes?
Appreciating what is, what I have.
Appreciating what is, what I have.
So one is this experience of gratitude towards what I have. So it could be in terms of, say, some possessions that I have. It could be in terms of certain abilities or competencies I have.
It could be in terms of relationships I have. What else? Yes?
Gratitude to what I learn.
Towards what we learn.
Yes.
Yeah.
In relation with other people.
In relation with other people.
So we have, of course, also others very clearly connected in this experience of gratitude. What we learn from them, what we obtain from them. What else? What could be other expressions of gratitude?
To be healthy.
That's our aim. Oh, you mean because we are healthy, that's another. That's something we have. Good health.
Yeah.
That's another thing. We could also treat that as a possession we have. It's a possession. One is physical possessions. The other is things that we have, like good health. Being grateful for that. What else? Yeah.
The gratitude of just being.
Just being. That's very interesting. There is actually some research that specifically targets this area of having gratitude for the present moment. Being. Just here, I'm here. I'm here in this moment. Having gratitude for that.
There is some interesting work that has been done on this. What is it to have gratitude for the present moment? Gratitude for being. Related to that is the gratitude one has towards various situations one has experienced in the past. We can have lots of experiences of gratitude that people experience, and this has been scientifically sort of investigated.
So people in psychology, in the study of gratitude, do you know anything about this? How do they try and measure this? They actually try and measure it. How do they try and measure it? Anyone is aware? Some very interesting experiments have been done. So broadly speaking, there are various ways, but broadly speaking,
one is what we call, we have gratitude expression, and then we have something called the gratitude contemplation. So one is you're expressing it in some ways. One way of expressing it, say for example, you write a letter, you make a telephone call, something like that. Contemplation, you bring in experiences of gratitude in meditation. You maintain a gratitude journal. You write down every day before you go to bed three things for which you are grateful.
So they actually make people do that. And I'll tell you a couple of interesting experiments that were conducted.
But generally speaking, studies that have been done on gratitude have found exceedingly positive results, exceedingly positive and very clear connection with various forms of well-being. So one is more short-term psychological well-being. I use the symbol for psychology. Please don't get confused. The Greek symbol psi saves me some writing. And then you have more long-term, and what these are, I will tell you, long-term well-being. Again, more psychological well-being. I'll speak to you about what this means. It has been connected to social well-being, and it has been connected to physical well-being. So it's a very substantial body of work that has been done in these past 10 to 13 years that has connected the experience of gratitude to various forms of well-being. Short-term psychological well-being, what does that mean? Basically, the experience of happiness. So they have various gratitude measures. You have scales on which you measure how grateful a person is as a personality trait, as a trait. And second, how often is the person practicing experiencing gratitude towards others and situations, etc., etc. You measure it, and then you relate it to other outcomes. So one is you relate it to the experience of happiness, short term, right now, how happy I feel. The experience of positive effect, how positive am I feeling in the moment. How satisfied I am with my life in the present. This is short term psychological, short term well-being, subjective experience.
People who show high gratitude as a personality trait, but also as a practice, significantly show higher levels of happiness, higher experience of life satisfaction. Across large samples, there is a very clear relationship. This is short-term experience of well-being. More long-term experience of psychological well-being, that is experiencing things like, for example, purpose in life. People who are more grateful are more likely to experience purpose and meaning in life significantly. It is related to things like environmental mastery, their control, their understanding, their belief that they have some control over their environment. People who have a high level of gratitude experience a better control over their environment, over their physical, social environment. It is connected to the experience of acceptance of the self. People who have high levels of gratitude also show higher levels of self-acceptance. It is connected to psychological resilience, the ability to bounce back from difficulties, from trauma, from difficult experiences. People who have high levels of gratitude show higher levels of resilience. Across a number of variables, self-acceptance, resilience, purpose, personal growth, environmental mastery, people who have high levels of gratitude are able to show higher levels of positive coping. There is also negative coping. Negative coping is escaping, avoiding. That's also coping. But you have difficult situations, you escape and you avoid, you're coping. But that's negative coping. Positive coping, confronting the situation, mediating. So this people who have high levels of gratitude show higher levels of constructive, positive coping. So this is a very significant amount of data. Social well-being. People who have higher levels of gratitude tend to be more altruistic. They tend to engage more in selfless action. They tend to help others more, both monetarily, but also in kind. Their actions. They tend to be engaged in voluntary work more. They tend to be engaged with a lot of these activities a lot more. So it has a great social relevance for the world. People who have high levels of gratitude engage lesser in risky behavior. They engage lesser in substance abuse, nicotine dependence, alcohol. You find it significantly lesser in people who are higher on gratitude. Physical health. People who have higher levels of gratitude show better levels of cardiovascular functioning. Experience more peace, right? Better levels of cardiovascular functioning, lower incidence of heart disease, anxiety, of course, and as such, lower levels of stress. So over these past 13 to 15 years, we have accumulated a lot of evidence in support of the scientific reason, rationale behind experiencing gratitude. So then people said, okay, if it is really so good, how do we use it as a tool in, for example, therapy? What about depression? Now, if people have depression and they come for therapy, how do we use our knowledge of gratitude in therapy, in healing people? How do you do that? So there was one study carried out in which you had 6 therapeutic interventions, various interventions. They expect large study. So you had 6 various therapeutic interventions for depression. And in these interventions, some of the things that people used was this. One was the expression of gratitude. So people were asked to write a letter to someone towards whom they felt gratitude. Someone who had done something very nice for them in their lives. Right? They were asked to write a letter, go and give that letter. This is gratitude expression. Write the letter and go and give that letter to that person. And they showed that this simple act, they did it just once. The simple act, and these were depressed people, right? The simple act led to an increase in their levels of positive well-being and happiness by 10%. And the results held for one full month. Just one act. For one full month, they experienced this increase in the level of well-being. What was even more, so this is a short-term effect, short-term improvement in our well-being. What was even more interesting was, there were also groups, these were groups of depressed people, right? They had another experiment where people had to engage in gratitude, grateful contemplation, it's called, grateful contemplation, where a very simple technique, they were asked to write down every day in a journal three things that they were grateful for. That's it, nothing else. Just every day in the night before going to sleep, write down in your journal three things that you are grateful for. And they were asked to do this for just 1 week. Many of them did it for more than a week because they liked their activity. The results kept, their level of well-being kept increasing. After 1 month they measured, it was higher. After 2 months, higher. 3 months, even higher. And the most significant results were seen after 6 months. And over a period of 6 months, their experience of well-being increased, their experience of happiness increased and held. So this is one way of approaching treatment. One way of approaching treatment is investigate all the problems of your life, which may also be useful. The other way is moving outside the realm of problems and looking at something that is already there, which is wonderful, which is good, and developing on that. And it seems to have even therapeutic relevance. So this is the evidence we have right now in support of gratitude and how it influences our well-being in various ways. Physical, psychological, short-term, long-term, social well-being. That's a good thing to have, right? Gratitude. So you can experiment with this. We have our next talk in, 2 weeks' time, I think. Or 3 weeks' time, something like that. 1st December. So you have time. Every day in the night, just write down three things that you're grateful for. Do it every day for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Do it and you see the experience of gratitude yourself. There were other experiments conducted where they tried to compare different ways of expressing gratitude or experiencing gratitude. One was, there were three conditions. One was you write down, you think about someone for whom you're grateful and you write down about that person. Another was you write down a letter to that person towards whom you're grateful. And the third was you just think about that person. You bring that person into your mind and you think, you contemplate, grateful contemplation. All three interventions led to a substantial increase in the person's experience of well-being. But the greatest influence was when people were asked to contemplate, think, meditate upon the person towards whom they feel grateful. That led to the greatest increase. You know, Gallup organization, it's a famous, world-famous organization that does a lot of surveys on attitudes and behavior. They did a survey recently. And they found out that 95% or 94% of people feel that this is about forgiveness, of course, they feel it's very important. 85% of them said we need outside help for forgiveness. But very interestingly, what seemed to work best for them was meditative prayer, meditative contemplation on the positive aspects of their lives that helps them in forgiveness. There's a very deep connection between gratitude and forgiveness. If you can experience gratitude, somehow it seems to give the person the strength to be able to actually forgive. So there's a very deep connection between gratitude and forgiveness. So it's a great thing to have, and we can actually work with it. We can use it as a tool. But it has to be heartfelt, that's the thing. It has to be heartfelt. I can't do it as a superficial exercise. But I start doing it, it slowly comes. You experiment with this and you will see for yourself how it emerges. So, what stops us from having gratitude? Gratitude seems to have a lot of benefits.
Focus on problems and things that don't work.
Things that don't work. Focus on problems. What kind of problems?
Lack of anything.
Lack of something. Mm. What else? It's things that I did not receive. Is that what you say? Things I don't have.
Yeah.
Things I don't receive from others, for example. So say, for example, I want to experience something or I want to receive something from someone, I don't get it. What does that lead to in close relationships?
Disappointment.
Disappointments. Mm. And then?
Anger.
Pain. Anger. Disappointments. This is what is spoken about as resentment. In English we say resentment. I don't know any. How would you say that in Danish? Is there a word for resentment in Danish? Yeah. But you know, we all know what it means, right? The resentment. We harbor a grudge. We harbor a grudge against the world, against other people maybe, against situations, sometimes also against the self. We have our breath. Sorry?
Ausgleich.
Is that the word?
Yes. Is everything Ausgleich?
Fantastic. I've learned a new word. So, we have this experience of resentment. There's something lacking in my life that stops me from the experience of actual gratitude. So we carry a lot of resentments. Where do these resentments come from? Where do these resentments?
Everywhere.
From everywhere.
Our expectations.
Expectations we want to have, and then we don't get.
What think we ought to compare it to others.
What else? So one is this experience of expectations which are not fulfilled, and therefore we carry resentment. What else?
Well, it can be comparison, jealousy.
Comparison.
Envy.
That can also create resentment. Mm. Interesting. So we experience resentment in various ways. So one is the experience of comparison, envy, that can also lead to resentment. The other is expectations. What else? Anything else?
Might be projections of what you don't like in yourself.
What we don't like in ourselves. So we hold it against others. Interesting. Yes?
Self-pity.
Self-pity?
Yeah.
How is that a resentment?
Well, that's
resentment is like I'm holding something against someone.
No, I meant like something that stops me from feeling gratitude.
Ah, okay. Something that stops you from feeling gratitude. This pity. Any other experiences? Yes?
You can also hold a resentment for yourself if something that you want to do in your life and it doesn't succeed. Then you can turn it in instead of outward. We're speaking a lot about turning it out in relations and circumstances.
Okay.
Self-esteem, you don't have.
We have no self-esteem, that can also lead to various experiences of resentment against others.
Yeah, or yourself.
Or the self.
Yeah.
And so here we work with, when we have, and we're carrying resentment, and it could be towards self, it could be towards others, then we have to, yes.
Also, if something kind of bad happens to us, and we focus too much on that, and forget about, you know, the nice things.
Yeah. So let's try and take this down. So there is some resentment. This resentment is coming, for example, from what you said, some experience of transgression. Transgression is when, say, for example, someone has crossed a boundary or a threshold, or you yourself have crossed a boundary or a threshold. It's a transgression against your sense of self. You follow this? Transgression. So, for example, something bad has happened. Someone has done something which is... I see that as a transgression against my sense of self. Someone has said something nasty, or someone has exploited me in some way, and I harbor some resentment against that person. The other is, we have spoken about it, the experience of failed expectations. I have certain expectations that are failed, and that leads to the experience of resentment. We also spoke about some, say for example, some comparisons that we make, perhaps between what we have and what others have, and that leads to resentment. And we have spoken about its comparison, its source in low self-esteem. So we have various sources of this resentment. But a lot of this transgression that we carry with us, and especially failed expectations, these transgressions create, some of you have also spoken about, this experience of hurt, pain, that I'm carrying from the past. And then we develop, interestingly, an identity around that hurt. We develop an identity around that hurt.
So we cannot see clearly.
We develop an identity around that hurt. And very often we understand, some of you mentioned this,
This resentment, of course, can be towards the self and can be towards others. So we say we carry a resentment towards the self. We carry a resentment towards others. And others we perceive have done some transgression against the self, and we have sort of crossed perhaps our own boundaries sometimes and committed a transgression against the self. The understanding that we have many times in psychology, a lot of research says that this, what we experience from the others, basically, it is very painful. The transgression of the others are very, very painful. We experience the pain because it reminds us of what we have done to ourselves.
I also find we have a lot of excuses that says it's also because that we cannot do this and that, because so and so and so, my childhood, my parents, my sister,
yeah,
my work. We have excuses all the time for not being or not feeling gratitude or using our minds.
So one explanation of that would be this holding others responsible, this holding others responsible for problems that I'm experiencing, this holding others gives me an escape from something else that I am experiencing inside. And the other's behavior reminds me of what I am experiencing inside. The hurt I am experiencing from the others reminds me of the hurt I am carrying inside. And that experience is very, very painful.
Yeah. And can also, I mean, it makes you blind to come to work with yourself and get out of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel better just being in this black hole.
Mm.
Because it's more safe, you know how it is.
It gives me an escape. And so we say we hold grudges against others. We hold grudges against others because holding those grudges against others gives me a mechanism of defending my ego from the hurt and the pain I have created for myself. How do we understand this? Does it make sense or is it Latin?
It is Latin, but
it does make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. It is Latin, but it makes sense. And so when we speak about forgiveness, we are actually speaking about the renunciation of this identity, which means the renunciation of the hurt. That is going beyond, you understand this process of renouncing? Letting go. Letting go of the identity that has been created around the hurt, which means letting go of the hurt itself. But that requires a process. That requires a very clear process, a conscious process, and which is what we will speak about today shortly. But do you follow? Is it clear?
Yes. It also has to be clear what it is, and it's sometimes very difficult to find exactly the point of what is it that you're hurt about.
We will actually go through a process right now, where we will try and identify. So if there is something I am finding difficult to forgive from the past, so maybe very, very painful, whatever the experience is, can we find out why is it that painful for me? Why is it that painful for me? Let us try and work with this right now. Okay? Please don't go too much into the thoughts, then you will feel all sorts of things. But I would like you to bring into mind some person that you are unable to forgive.
Unable
to forgive. Or you sort of have forgiven but not really forgiven, you know. If we have to live with someone, you have to live with them, so you want to forgive them. So I've sort of forgiven them, but again it comes back. Now, many of us have that experience, right? So think of one person you had difficulty forgiving, even though you want to forgive. You have it, or maybe also someone you don't want to forgive. That can also be, I don't want to forgive that person. Has anyone brought someone in their mind? Anyone who has no one in their mind? No one?
I learned to be.
Oh, fantastic. Why are you here?
No one's getting.
You're here to spread the
No.
Okay. Now I would like you to think about, when you think of the experiences you have had with this person, or maybe it could also be with this group of people, it could also be a group of people. When you think of the experiences you have had with this person or with this group of people, What exactly do you feel? Think of that. What is it exactly that you feel when you think of that experience, when you think of this person or these group of people with whom you've had that experience because of which you are unable to forgive? What is it exactly that you feel? So what is it exactly that we feel? Yes?
That my self-esteem has been destroyed.
Self-esteem has been destroyed. What experience? What else? Yes?
Not accepted.
Not accepted. Experience of rejection. So let's try and take this off. So one is the experience of low self-esteem, or more strongly put, my self-esteem has been destroyed. The experience of rejection. What else?
Impotence.
Sense of impotence.
Not being able to do it.
Powerlessness. Experience of powerlessness. Yes, what else? Sense of powerlessness, sense of being shattered, self-esteem.
Injustice.
Injustice.
Shame or vulnerability.
Vulnerability, shame. So we have this experience of injustice. We have this experience of shame and also vulnerability. What else? Yes?
And not to be seen.
Not to be seen?
Yes, I mean, I don't know what it's called in English.
How are you saying?
Invisible.
You want to be invisible?
No.
But you experience as though you are invisible.
Yes, yes, they can't see me.
Oh, like I have no presence, no existence, no importance, something like that. You're saying something?
It's actually kind of similar, but emotional neglect.
Neglect, yeah. So sense of rejection or neglect, someone said. Invisibility or lack of importance, lack of relevance, whatever you want to call it. What else? Anything else? Any other experiences? No? Yes?
Pain, sorrow.
Pain, sorrow, it's there.
Okay.
We've spoken about it, but yes, the experience of pain, sorrow coming in various ways. All of you have similar experiences? No other experiences, yes?
Mixed experiences.
Like?
Some good, like you're surprised that a person like this could behave in that way.
Mm.
And also, it could be, you know.
Mm. But what is creating the hurt? It's not the good aspect of the person.
No.
But it's the other side.
Yeah.
The what we have experienced, right?
Yeah. It was very difficult for me to figure out what I was thinking when we had this silence, because sometimes I don't feel a thing and sometimes I feel mixed.
It sort of comes back in the mind and you feel something. Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. Whatever it is you have felt, right? Whatever it is you may have felt, you may have mentioned it, you may not have mentioned it, some of these things. Whatever it is that you have felt in response to this person's behavior or this group of people's behavior, the question is, going back to your life, throughout your life, have you ever made anyone else feel the same way? whatever you felt, have you ever made anyone else feel the same way? Yes?
Yes. I have a question. Although I sort of follow your intention or something, I was also wondering how can I know what is the effect of my actions or words on somebody? I cannot know what the person is thinking or feeling inside.
Sometimes it's difficult, but many times we know. But you're right, sometimes it can be difficult.
And in a way, whatever I do or say, the person doesn't have to kind of take it inside, so it's actually not me making him or her feel something, but it's the person who feels that way.
So then what, we give up responsibility for our actions? Is that what you're trying to say? Is that also a convenient escape from our own guilt? So I'm not making you feel, you're feeling it because you're feeling it. But you're right. That for me, if I apply that to myself, it makes a lot of sense. So if you're nasty to me, and I tell myself, I'm feeling bad not because of that person's nastiness. I'm feeling bad because I expect that person to make me feel good. So for me, it works very well. Right? That's taking responsibility. But if I say, well, I made you feel bad, but it's not me who's made you feel bad. It's your expectation from me that has made you feel bad. It is true, but that doesn't really help that person, does it? Apply to me helps me. But how does it help the other person? I have done an act. I have performed an act that has influenced that person. Yes, it could be that it was because of that person's inner problems they got influenced so much. But still, it was I who committed that act. Otherwise, you would have no law. No, no, there's nothing. I mean, why? I'm not exploiting. You are getting exploited.
But you cannot control the experience.
Yeah, right. That is true. You're 100% right. And that's also probably what you were referring to. I cannot always control the experience inside the other. But the question here is not about whether or not I can control or not control. The question is, am I aware of the transgressions I have performed? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
All of you would recognize something that you did similar to what you're experiencing, if not exactly the same. The idea behind this whole exercise is this, that this hurt that I am carrying due to the transgression of the other actually reminds me of something else I have done in the past which I may have pushed away. Because it's very painful. I've pushed away out of my conscious awareness. I don't think about it. I haven't addressed it. I haven't worked on transforming it. The other person's experience, the other person's behavior towards me reminds me of that hurt I'm carrying inside. Because when I go against my own inner set of values, I'm committing a transgression against myself. And when I commit a transgression against myself, I'm losing self-respect. I'm losing my self-esteem. And having lost that self-esteem, then I want others to help me recover that self-esteem. And when others behave disrespectfully towards me, I feel that low self-esteem again, which I have created. And so one way of looking at forgiveness is, first of all, recognition. And the problem again, now this can be a very tricky thing. When we say recognition and acceptance of things we have done in the past, we can get into a very negative spiral. We can get into a very negative spiral. So we say, when we speak about forgiveness, we are speaking about the renunciation actually of all these things that we have spoken about. And that requires the recognition. Recognition of both. One is the wrongs that I have performed, but also the goodness within me.
And these two things have to be held together in balance. Otherwise, we can just, we have plenty of people in the world who keep blaming themselves for all the problems they have had and all the problems others have had. That also happens. They get into a very negative spiral. And that's not something we want to get into. But it is at the same time, if I ignore my own responsibility towards things, then it's difficult for me to forgive others. But at the same time, I have to be aware of the goodness inside me. I did that, I performed that transgression, but that is not me. I did that out of insecurity, I did that out of fear. And this is where we say recognition, but recognition along with empathy. Empathy is this real feeling of putting yourself in the shoes of the other, putting others in your shoes, this sense of deep understanding of why is it that I did what I did? Why is it that the other did what they did? And usually it is because of what? It is because of their own hurt. It is because of their pain. It is because of their lack of self-esteem. It is because of that. It is because of their insecurity. And if I did the same, that is also because of my pain, my insecurity, my lack of self-esteem, this deep empathy, this deep recognition, not to judge others or the self, but to really feel the deep insecurity and fear and pain that creates such actions of transgression. And then empathy, we move towards acceptance. We move from acceptance towards realization, and then we move towards purpose. These are some of the things that we could work with, but I will walk you through some examples. Yes. The chart, yeah, I will try and do that. My handwriting is very beautiful, as well, as you can see. But that's not something, that's a manufacturing defect. Not much, but I'll try and make it larger. The chart is also very small.
Is it always that way that
It's a very good question. Is it always? What about people who have been raped, for example?
Yes.
How do they work with that?
Yes.
What about people who watch their children being killed in front of them? How do they work with that?
Yes.
I'll give you some extreme examples to illustrate. So what does it mean, taking back on the self, what does it mean? It doesn't here mean self-blame. It means taking responsibility for the self. I'll give you a few examples.
Okay.
I'll give you 3-4 cases. One case is here in Denmark. I had an experience some time ago with a friend of mine who is also not from Denmark. He's a foreigner. He's coming from a different country, from outside, and he's living in Denmark. Now, this is a problem that we experience many times. We cross cultures. We go into another culture. We experience different behaviors. Sometimes we are not comfortable with those behaviors. Others are not comfortable with our behaviors. And sometimes there is a clash. So he had the experience at his workplace that he was being discriminated against because he was a foreigner. He had that experience. Now again, this is a perception. And it's difficult to understand whether that is really the case or not the case. But we know all over the world, it's not about Denmark, it's every country in the world, there are some people who are a little problematic when it comes to dealing with people from different cultures. It's there everywhere. So maybe there were some people like that at his workplace. It doesn't matter. What matters is, of course, his inner experience. He feels hurt. He feels hurt, right? He's carrying this hurt inside him. And he's developed this identity around this hurt that people are mistreating me because I'm a foreigner here in Denmark and I'm being discriminated against. So I asked him, why do you feel that discrimination? He gave me a couple of instances. This happened and this happened. And they behave differently towards their Danish colleagues and because I'm, whatever, from wherever I am, they behave like that towards me. This is the experience of discrimination. One level of understanding is, of course, to actually challenge that experience, which I also did in one case. I'll give you the example of that case first, and then we'll come to this. So that case was very interesting. This was a man from the US. He's coming and working in Denmark. And then he feels, and then he, cross-cultural management, and I'll work a little bit with that, the counseling with these people, expatriates. So he comes and he speaks to me and he says, you know, he's a very talented guy, quite accomplished, a lot of achievement. He says, I'm in great trouble with these days. So what happened? No, these days are all racists.
I said, really? That's a nice understanding. Enlightenment, all beings are rhesus. Very nice. So, okay, so there are no rhesus in other countries, only in Denmark. He said, I don't know about all that, but you know, all beings are rhesus. So why do you feel like that? He says, I feel a lot of discrimination at the workplace. People don't invite me for social events. So I said, but why don't they invite you? He said, no, but they invite all their friends. They don't invite me. And this is crazy. And I try to be friends with them, but they don't accept my friendship and all that stuff. He went on for some time. That's okay, but I understand. You know, these are usually misunderstandings. I know that very clearly because my experience with Denmark hasn't been that. And many others, it hasn't been like that. But usually there are some misinterpretations of certain behaviors. So I asked him, what happens at your workplace? What do you do throughout the day? He said, I go to work at this time. And he walked me through the daily schedule. He said, okay, so what happens? I work, we are 8:30, I'm in work, and then we work. What about your colleagues? They also come at the same time. Well, what time do you break for lunch? They break for lunch at 11:30. So you all have lunch at 11:30. He said, 11:30 is too early for me. I can't have lunch at 11:30. Mm-hmm. I have lunch much later, maybe around 2 when I feel hungry. I said, okay, what do you do when your colleagues are having lunch? Oh, they all have lunch together. It's very funny. These days are very strange people. They all have lunch together. So what do you do when they're having lunch? I said, well, do my work. I'm busy. I have lots of things to do. When I feel hungry, I go and grab a sandwich. And then what happened? You walk. Do you see something that has happened?
Yeah.
What has happened?
Yeah, well, he asked for it because they don't think he wants to be with them.
There you go. That is exactly what, and see, this is something we don't always understand. So we carry this hurt, which is really an imagined construction. As you said, being a Dane, I assume you are.
Yeah.
Yes. So there is a norm at the Danish workplace that we have lunch together.
Even if you're not hungry.
Even if you're not hungry, you have lunch together. This is a norm. This is a norm that has evolved over time through Danish history and culture. Whatever reasons, we may go into that at another point in time. But that's a norm. This guy, by not going there, is sending a signal to them that I don't want to interact with you. And he's totally unaware, he's blissfully unaware of that. See? He says, these guys are mistreating me, but he is actually sending them a signal, I don't want to interact with you. And the Danish respect for privacy, okay, he doesn't want to be disturbed, you know. Stay away from it. So, respect for privacy coming across in a very different way, which he can't understand, right? But a very simple thing. So many a times the hurt we carry is a construction because of misunderstanding. We carry some experiences of the past of low self-esteem. We want others, we expect others, we have these expectations. Others should make me feel good about myself. And that doesn't happen. And he, is that it? He said, yeah, that's about it. Go have lunch with them tomorrow. He said, oh, how can I do that? I haven't done it for 2 years. It's very strange. Of course it's very strange. So the first day he went for lunch, everybody, you know, of course, because they're not used to it. And slowly they get used to it. That's leadership, right? Someone has to take the leadership. Of course, someone from the office could have taken that leadership as well, understanding this American guy is not able to understand our norms. But no one took leadership. Of course, the Danish respect for privacy. But then someone else has to take leadership from the other side, right? So he has to understand. And in some time, things worked out okay. So this is why, as you said correctly, sometimes it's just a construction. But at other times, there can be real incidents. Right? So I was speaking about this guy who feels that he's being discriminated against. There, you know, because I'm foreigner, I'm being discriminated. And I went through the process with him. Has there been any time in your life that others felt that you have discriminated against them? He came up with some instance. Said, yeah. So there was this person who had come. He said he was from a country which is quite poor. So he said, in our country we have this way of helping others who are poor because there is no social system of supporting these people. So he said there was this person from our distant relations, and we wanted to help him. And he was staying in our house and we were looking after his education. And he said that when that person came, he wanted to be a part of our family. But I felt that he's not a part of my family. He's just someone I'm helping. And he said that many times I communicated this to him. And at that time I didn't think, but now when I think back, I know he must have felt very hurt. He must have felt, because he came with so much love, I want to be a part of the family. It's like family for me. But he's saying that we are helping you, but you stay there. Mm. You know, this is the experience of discrimination. And he felt, I know, he felt like that. And then we went deeper, why did you behave like that? He said, I felt threatened that he was coming too close to us, my family. He can't be a member of my family, I'm just helping him. It satisfies my ego. He went into that in depth. So many a time, these experiences of the past, the transgressions we have performed against ourselves and against others, we carry inside that because that is a part of our identity. When we experience the same from others, it reminds us of that, and that's painful. When he recognized that, when he could recognize that, when he could really feel that, he actually could stop feeling that he was being discriminated against. That began to be. And then he could see that some things I'm just imagining. And some things may be true, but it's okay, I can deal with it. If they are discriminating, that's because of their insecurity. So I have to make them feel secure. Simple. That boy felt I discriminated against that boy. That's what he said. I discriminated against that boy because of my insecurity. But I was feeling threatened, he was coming too close. If they are discriminated against me, discriminating against me, they are feeling insecure. So my work then is to make them feel safe. If they feel safe, they won't discriminate. If at all they are discriminating. Total transformation. So actually forgiveness doesn't even require forgiveness. It requires understanding. It requires empathy. It requires recognition. It requires acceptance. I realize stuff I have done in the past which has also made others feel the same way. I see a sense of meaning and purpose in that situation because that situation is actually helping me in returning to myself.
But if you are in this, education in yourself to getting to forgive everybody and empathy and so on, sometimes you can meet a person that you can think that these people can say or do something that can hurt you. So instead of trying to feel empathy, I do like this because...
Then I'm losing my control.
Because sometimes you know that this person can get inside you and really do turn on some things that can make you feel...
Then who's controlling you?
They are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You like being controlled by others.
No. That's why instead of doing that, I can feel that they can do it to me.
Yeah.
So instead of... these people will not be good for me. So I go the other way.
You're still making yourself weak.
Yeah, I can also kill them, but...
Then you make yourself more weak.
So this is the other aspect of forgiveness. This understanding that all are care-worthy. All human beings are care-worthy.
Everybody?
Every single person, including that guy in Norway, what's his name? Anders Breivik. Everyone is worthy of care. The issue is, if people are behaving in the way that they are behaving, that is because of their own pain. Mm-hmm. They may do terrible things. It doesn't mean we don't punish them. There is law. We have to punish. We have to do all that. But we don't have to hate.
But if something really did something awful to your child, I think I would be capable of doing everything in this world.
Yes, and you would be
losing... I wouldn't care about.
Exactly. But then you would be going against the values of the spirit.
Yes.
And then I am weakening myself. Then I am losing self-esteem for myself. And this is very painful. That person has to be dealt with. I don't have to hate that person. And this goes back to the old saying in Christianity, hate the sin but not the sinner. I can learn to differentiate between these two. I'll give you a couple of other examples. This is a former client of mine who was raped. How do you forgive? How do you deal with that? Gang raped by two men. Not gang, but two men. So two students, some of you I think know about this case, I mentioned it before. Two girls, they went out, it was a big university campus, some 2,000 acres, there were forests and lakes inside, and they went out there. And they were attacked by two men at knife point, and they were raped. That was a very painful experience. You have this experience of shame, of being used and thrown aside, experience of guilt, did I do something to deserve that? All these things happening inside them were very, very painful. And of course she went into a deep depression after that. And she didn't speak about it to anyone because it was so shameful for her to even speak about it. But she spoke to me after some point in time. And we were working with various things, nothing was really helping us. Then I thought I'll try something challenging and risky. But that's something we have to try. And then I asked her the same questions that we worked with today. I asked her, okay, so how did you feel at that point in time? So I felt this I've been used and thrown aside. I have no value. And then I asked her, has anyone else felt like this because of your behavior? She was shocked, and then she started crying. And then she started speaking about her experiences with her former boyfriend. He said that I was never really interested in him, but at that time I was free. And he was very nice, I mean, he was a nice guy, he was charming, he was rich, he had lots of money, he was buying me all these gifts. He was very popular. So I was with him. When I realized I didn't want to be with him anymore, I just dumped him, and I know how he felt. He felt used and thrown aside. And it's a very simple thing, but this recognition, this realization of something from her own past that she had committed helped her overcome that experience. From that time she started recovering, from that session she started recovering from her depression. So even with such extreme cases, sometimes it can work. These extreme cases sometimes remind us of something else that we have done. So there are lots of experiences like that. In Africa, I have a friend of mine here, he works with an NGO. They do, they go and they work, they play football in Africa. Football as a way of reconciling. They play in warring tribes in some countries in Africa. So he was saying in one of our experiences, he had a wonderful experience. So you had these two groups who were at war with each other before, civil war going on in that country. They come together, and he would actually see a wonderful experience, an amazing, mind-blowing experience. So this woman, and so this is the reconciliation committee, right? They work a lot with that in Africa. There's so many tribes and all. So this woman is speaking about how her son was killed by members of the other tribe. And she was speaking about how her son was killed. And a man from the other tribe stands up and says, it was I who killed your son. And the mother is here, the killer is here. He gets up and says, it was I who killed your son. And as he sees her suffering, he starts crying. He's a big man. He falls down on his feet. He breaks down crying. He's begging her for her mercy and for her forgiveness. She sees him suffering because of her suffering. She's able to reconcile with that situation. So many people work with such extremes. Now, we say, okay, the guy has done something wrong and that guy deserves to be punished. But this person now has chosen to forgive him. This is the generation of empathy. Even in such extreme cases, sometimes people work with empathy. Recognizing that the other, why the other has performed what they have, she sees him suffering, she sees him repenting for his guilt. She says, okay, I can let him go. What is done. My son will never come back. They somehow learn to live together. But this giving up, this renunciation of this identity, renunciation of the identity of hurt and pain I am carrying with me, can be facilitated through the experience of empathy. Empathy with the other who has actually committed that act against me. So one way of generating the empathy is looking at myself, stuff I have done in the past that may have affected others in the same way. And then I can identify what that person has done and let go. And the other is looking at why that person has behaved the way they have behaved and understanding that in spite of whatever the person has done, that person is worthy of care. They have done whatever they have done because of their own insecurity, their own hurt and pain. And that helps us in going beyond. You were saying something?
You
actually free the person. There is great power in forgiveness because when we forgive, we are not just healing the self, we are healing the other person. There is a great power in that. You're actually, because that person is also having guilt. That person is also suffering. If a human soul has committed a wrong, that soul has created guilt because it is against the nature of the human spirit to do anything that is wrong or nasty. That is not the nature of the spirit. The person is doing it because of their own insecurity, their hurt and their pain. They are feeling that guilt. And when you can feel for them, you are liberating them from their guilt. And that person actually can become a very good friend. I have personally experienced it in my life. If we learn to forgive through understanding and empathy, that's it. Through understanding the other person is worthy of care, that person becomes a very good friend. Okay, not very extreme instances, I don't have that. But yes, with many instances I've had, yes.
What if the person who hurt you abused your empathy?
Empathy is not sympathy, empathy is not pity, empathy is just understanding. Empathy does not mean that I just give in and then I let the other treat me as a doormat. Mm-hmm. Empathy is just understanding where the other is coming from. Feeling that person's pain, that's it. But sometimes, you know, I have to also take practical actions. Sometimes I may have to separate myself from that person because the person has had a very deep habit of repeating these patterns, and then I have to separate. But again, we must understand, we need not hate. If we hate, I'm losing control over myself.
But separate is okay.
Sometimes it may be practical to do that, but I have to understand why I'm... But sometimes, yes, of course, sometimes it's practical to do that. If some person, someone has so deeply lost touch with themselves, no matter what you do, it happens sometimes. But mostly, we can transform people. In most instances, we can transform it. But this deep understanding of the other is worthy of care. And then, of course, the practice of meditation here helps because we go into, first is the understanding, the knowledge, the deep insight that every situation has a sense of meaning and I can understand, I can derive a sense of purpose and meaning from that situation through generating empathy, through using spiritual knowledge that no soul commits a transgression without feeling guilt. They may not be aware, but they are feeling that inside. And that's not the true nature of the soul. Using this deep insight, transforming that into the experience of deep stillness, going deep within, connecting with our own inner core. Yes?
But how do you take the step towards another soul? Do you maybe that we should talk about this problem? Or
you could, but you know, in my experience, it's the inner work. I have seen in my life there is no need sometimes to talk to people. I have to transform what I feel. But as I start transforming what I feel, I can see the transformation in the other.
But you were telling about friendship,
yeah.
Made a friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, but I didn't sit and speak about it at all.
Okay.
I'll say it again and then we will wind up with some meditation. One experience, and there have been quite a few experiences like that in my life. But one experience I remember, I joined an organization and there was a colleague working with me. And she somehow felt threatened by me because she had a role to play and I brought in the same competencies, so she felt threatened. And anyway, she started speaking a lot about me behind my back. And I got to know about it through someone else and then I felt anger. What have I done to her? Why is she speaking? Righteousness, it's unfair, it's unjust. Injustice, sense of injustice, etc., etc. And by that time, I was already practicing meditation for a few years, right? So I have to be spiritual. So I said, no. And I said, if I'm practicing meditation, I might as well try and practice it. I mean, this is where I'm supposed to practice it. When I have the challenge, this is where I'm supposed to practice it. Otherwise, what's the point? What am I practicing?
What do you do?
Exactly. So then I sat down in the night and I said, how do I work with this? So I said, what's the theory? I'm not able to put the theory into practice, but what's the theory? The theory is, every soul is worthy of care. Every soul has goodness. Every soul is originally divine. Every soul is originally beautiful. If that person is doing something which is making me feel uncomfortable, firstly, it is my lack of self-esteem. I want the other to make me feel good. If the other is saying something bad about me, I'm feeling low because I want the other to make me feel good through their behavior. That's my problem, firstly. Secondly, if that person is doing something nasty, that is because of their own insecurity. They have fear inside. They have pain inside. That is why they are behaving the way they are behaving. This is empathy. But it still doesn't help. I still want to give it to her. Right? So then I said, no. How do I believe that that person is worthy of care? I have to believe it. Right now I don't believe it because I am so caught up in this experience of that person's behavior towards me. That's my ego. That's my identity. That's my problem. How do I convince myself the other is worthy of care? I sat down and I actually wrote down some aspects of that person that were positive, what does that person bring to the workplace? Simple things like that. What does that person bring to the workplace? What is that person contributing to the workplace? How are other people benefiting from her? What are the virtues this person displays? When I first met this person, I liked that person a lot. What did I see in that person that made me like her? I wrote very difficult. I couldn't think of anything first. Then I said, no, I have to practice. I'm spiritual now. I have to practice this. I wrote down. Slowly, the list started developing. And then every day, I didn't sit and talk to her. So what's our problem? Let's talk. No, I just used to go, say hello to her, talk to her a little bit, move out. And whenever I would think of her, I would try to bring in her goodness, try to bring in the thought that she's worthy of care. She's behaving the way she's behaving because of her own fear and anxiety.
Poor thing.
No, that's pity. I don't have to pity. She's not a poor thing. She's a good person. She deserves respect. It's not a poor thing. Not pity. She doesn't deserve my pity. She deserves my love because she's worthy of that love. It can be very easy to turn it into pity and play this ego game of I'm better than you. No, I'm no better than her. I've also done nasty things. She's doing them to me. That's fine. And as I said, in time our relationship transformed and now it's 20 years. And I haven't met her for 15 years. Every year on my birthday, her email is the first one in my inbox. We have such a good friendship. I met her whole family, she invited me home, I met her husband, met her child. We were having a problem, her child would speak to me, her husband would speak to me about his business issues. You know. We became so good. This is the power of transformation that we can actually use. This is one example. And there are many examples like that. So we don't have to sit and talk it out. Sometimes that may be useful, but in my experience, from a spiritual perspective, it's not necessary, really. It's about me setting my own heart in place. That's it. Through understanding and through the practice of spirituality. Yes?
I think that out of forgiveness comes to love then.
Very true. And actually forgive, there's not much to forgive, it's just to understand. And that's it, you go beyond. It's really the renunciation of this identity. It's really, that's about it. It's the renunciation. And this process can help me renounce this identity. Okay, shall we meditate? But you can ask anything if you would like to ask or say something if you would like to say. So, this process of meditation itself can be used in this work, in this process of forgiving. So if there is someone, say for example, that you find difficult before, so you have two exercises, here Mahabhaya, for the next 3 weeks, two exercises. One is keeping a gratitude journal. Every day before going to sleep, three things you are grateful for. The second thing, one person who you find very difficult to forgive. Sit down after having done your gratefulness exercise. Sit down, bring that person into your mind. You feel like meeting up that person maybe. Bring that person into your mind. See that person surrounded by light. And ask yourself, what is the goodness in this person? Why is this person worthy of my care? Why? Why does this person deserve my love? You say, it doesn't deserve my love. Mm-hmm. No. All souls deserve love. What is that? Secondly, how that person has made me feel. Who have I made? Others have felt like that because of me? Think of that experience. Maybe that will soften our approach towards this person. You can experiment with this. Maybe we could discuss it when you meet again. Anything you would like to ask or say? No? Yes, okay.
Did you find the research reports on the internet really available? Or how did you learn all the facts about gratitude? And
I'm a psychologist. I teach psychology.
Are they kind of relaxed on the internet?
Or? You can find many researchers on the internet. I teach in one place, I teach positive psychology, where we work with stuff like this. So I have a lot of research papers with me. But you do a search, Google Scholar. Even on Wikipedia, you can find a lot of references, and then you can look them up in any library here. Copenhagen libraries have very good access to all these journals. You'll find plenty of work. Yeah. Or you just write to some of these researchers, they send you the research articles if you want. Yeah. People who work in gratitude and forgiveness, quite nice people. So they'll send you all their work.
They will never say no.
They'll never say no. Okay, let's have a little bit. In the system of Raj Yoga that we practice, very often, again and again, we say, for yoga, for meditation to work, we need knowledge, we need understanding. If we don't have understanding, meditation becomes a superficial exercise. So when we say meditation, the union between the soul and God, for that, the soul has to first return to an inner state of peace. And if I'm holding anger and grudges against others in my heart, I'm not at peace. When I'm not at peace, I cannot connect with the Supreme. And I cannot draw on that power and that love from the Supreme. And therefore we say, we begin with knowledge. And so all that we spoke about today is one way of looking at these things that stop us from having that yoga, that union with God. And that is holding these resentments and grudges in our heart. The way to give them up is through understanding. Understanding what we have done. Understanding why others do the way what they do. Understanding the pain, the insecurity inside them. But also recognizing the pain and the insecurity within us that will stop us from having an egotistical sense of superiority over them. If we don't see the pain and hurt and insecurity within us, we see it in them, we can have the sense of superiority over them. But that defeats the whole purpose of meditation and spirituality. So this empathy is first recognizing the roots of insecurity and pain within the self, and also in others. And this helps us in identifying with the transgressor and therefore move towards forgiving them. So I let the mind and the body settle down. Entire existence slowly concentrating. Concentrating into a point in the center of the brain, the seat of the soul. I experience myself as just a spark of consciousness, a point of light. I experience as though this physical body and this physical world has disappeared from my awareness. All that remains is light. I see myself as a spark of consciousness in a world of light. Beyond the earth, beyond the moon, beyond the sun and the stars. Beyond space and time.
I see myself in the dimension of light, and I see myself in the presence of the Supreme. A point source of infinite peace, unconditional love. Ever-flowing bliss. I rest in his light, in the embrace of his light. The mind stabilized in this experience of union between I, the soul, and the Supreme, two beings of light, two sparkling stars of conscient energy. Beyond all identity, stabilized in this one original identity of being the eternal spirit, the child of the Supreme, the child. And holding on to this light, this silence, and this stillness, I allow myself to return back to this world of matter, back to this body, this costume of mine. And I once again take my place in the center of the brain, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. I, the eternal spirit, a being of light, a being of peace. Om Shanti.
Thank you.